When you have a relative working for you, and the relative gets you into trouble by his bad behavior, what do you do with the relative? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for our discussion today. We're dealing with background characters of the Old Testament, and today's character is Joab, David's weak, strong man. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Paul Dibdall from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. And I'd like to just toss that question out to them that I just asked. And of course, it's against the backdrop. Maybe I should give a backdrop of what happened here. David had a sister, Zeruiah. And she had three sons, Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. All three of them were part of David's power struggle. And these guys were forever getting David in trouble. At least three times he says something like this, "Oh, you sons of Zeruiah are too much for me." But he can't fire them because they're his relatives, apparently. Joab is involved. He kills Abner because Abner killed his brother Asahel. He played a key role in the death of Uriah the Hittite. He followed the instructions on setting up Uriah so that he could be killed. Yet Joab also intervened to bring the murderer Absalom back home, Absalom who had killed his brother. Joab actually brought him back home. But in the end, Joab also kills Absalom, the king's son. And when the king is so grief-torn that he can't act at all, Joab confronts him and says, "If you don't get your wits about you, this last thing will be worse than the former." Joab then takes down another rival, Amasa. So there are two generals that he kills in cold blood. Interestingly enough, and I don't know whether we will get around to talking about this one or not, but when David's fateful census took place, recorded in twice, in 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles 21, it is Joab whose conscience pricks him and says, "David, why are you wanting to number all these people?" David didn't catch that it was wrong, but crusty Joab knew that it was wrong. Now, when we read that story, we wonder, because the story doesn't say what was wrong with it, probably it was a sign of David's pride. And crusty Joab knew that that was not appropriate for David to number them. And then finally, on David's command at the end, Solomon brings Joab's blood back on his own head. David wasn't brave enough to kill his own relative, so he summons Solomon to do the task because, as he said, "In time of peace, you avenged blood taken in time of war." Now, that's a synopsis of the key roles that Joab plays throughout David's reign. So, tell me, what do you do with a relative who gets you into trouble? Does the story help us at all today, or do we just look back there and shake our heads?
Well, you know, most of us in most, well, you don't get to pick your family or your relatives. And it is true that every family system, if you go out far enough, has some relatives who are problematic. I remember as a boy, a relative who used to come by and always ask for money. He had all these big dreams about what he could do if he had X number of whatever the currency was. And he would go to one of my grandmothers who did have some money, not wealthy by any means, but I mean had a store and had some capital. And this guy would hang around for a week or 10 days just explaining how if he could just have this. And I don't know the details of the story, but he would be very disappointed or even upset if he didn't get the money. And if he did get the money, the dream never worked out. And so what do you do when you have a family reunion? You don't invite that relative. I think it's a real trouble. I guess what I don't understand about this story, though, is why David felt obligated to have Joab be his strong man. Couldn't he have given him a lesser profile? I mean,
well, one of the troubling places where, in fact, David appointed Amasa to be the general in mm-hmm. place of Joab. Mm-hmm. So what happens?
Joab kills Amasa.
Joab kills Amasa.
Yeah, and then David takes him on again.
David takes him on again.
Yeah.
Of course, this is all part of Samuel Kings, and as we've noted before in our discussions here, Samuel Kings is written right after the fall of Jerusalem. It's part of the author's purpose to show what a mess David's life was. And certainly his inability to control his family, his relatives, is part of the catastrophe that one reads when one reads the history of David.
But see, I have a hard time with the story also just because of the carnage.
Yes.
You know, and I know that in ancient times, especially in amongst kings and their families, that you have all kinds of these stories of the elimination of rivals or potential rivals, mm-hmm. whether they be young or whether they be old. So I understand that dynamic, but Job is a very troubling person to me. I don't know why David didn't tell him to, you know, promote him to some job where he didn't preside over anything.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that this story really helps us with good advice as to how to relate to a relative who causes trouble. We're reminded that this has been the case throughout history that, you know, but as far as turning to this story and say, here's what I ought to do at the next family reunion with Uncle so-and-so, I guess I don't find it here.
Yeah.
But I do agree that it's, you know, relatives are very difficult to deal with. How do you tell a relative that they're not welcome? How do you tell them, no, we have a family business, but you can't be in it?
Or if you have a family business and the relative turns out to be a real problem, how do you fire him?
It's very difficult to end that relationship, yes. The business relationship, without it affecting the family relationship.
And see, I wonder if this repeated appearance of Job is not a reflection of David's inability to deal with some family issues, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would like to think he could have sat down and said, Joab, look, this is not going well. But of course, he may have feared for his own life, given Joab's quickness with a knife and so forth.
Well, the one thing that's clear, after the Bathsheba event, David is basically a basket case in terms of his own family.
Yeah. Yeah, he has no more latitude to be.
No moral authority, and he simply can't control anything. So, you know, couldn't control Absalom, couldn't control Adonijah.
This line about David as a man after God's own heart, except in the case of Uriah the Hittite, it sounds to me like we would say there were other exceptions where maybe David was not. That is what we're saying here, isn't it? That he didn't handle the situation as well as he could have. That he there'd be other mistakes that we could point to in David's life.
Oh, I think that there are a host of them. You know, when you have a passage in Scripture, man after God's own heart, I think that one could tick off a number of places where David has marvelous insights. I think of one of my other favorite illustrations of David is when he was staying with the Philistines, and while they were away, the Amalekites came and wiped out Ziklag. And when they got there, all the women, all the property was gone. And David came with his warriors, and they were ready to string him up. Well, they went after the Amalekites, and some of the men were so exhausted that they couldn't follow on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they stayed behind with the baggage, and the rest of them went on. When they got there, they got all the people, and they got all the goods. But the people, the soldiers who went with David, said, we'll give those that were too tired to go on, we'll give them their people, but we won't give them any share in the luggage. And David says, as he who stays by the luggage, so he who goes into the battle, we will share and share alike. And Scripture is quite clear that that principle of fairness was something. And I like that about David. He was aware of the fact that you don't just...
Lots of good things about David, but lots of things that weren't so good, too.
Yeah.
So what do you make of this one episode we know of where Joab seems to have this conscience still at work, where he tells David, no, you shouldn't be numbering Israel? I mean, what do you make of that? He seems to have been a man who was expedient in all other regards, but not this one.
Well, I just made some notes down here, the kind of Joab the politician. In some cases, he does what he's told. For instance, with Uriah the Hittite, he follows David's instructions there. He does what he thinks best, in some cases, with reference to Absalom. And in other cases, he just does what his body chemistry does when he kills Abner and Amasa. But I think even the worst of people can still have glimpses of remarkable insights.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're not quite as good as we think we are, and they're probably not all totally bad as we think they may be. Yeah.
I mean, you take Schindler's List, for example. You know, Schindler was a character, but he was instrumental in saving many people. And so it's hard to draw those lines and say this person is totally bad and this person is totally good. We've all got some flat sides.
I know with our kids as they were growing up and still now, but especially early on, we tried not to label people as, oh, that, you know, that's a bad person. We would talk, well, that person is making some bad decisions is what we would try to say, so that try to differentiate the decisions that people make from just a blanket label as good or bad, because those labels don't work.
But then the hard question is, which of the kids will you let your kids play with? See, that's where it becomes difficult. I remember when I was a young pastor, we had a very difficult situation. One of the best families in the church with four children had been instrumental in bringing a woman into the church, and she had several kids. It was a highly undisciplined family. And the young girl at 15 became pregnant by a married man in town. The mother, who was the only one that joined the church, said, oh, I'm going to have my first grandchild. Well, as a young pastor, I was, you know, deeply troubled with that. But the amazing thing about this family, they did not cut themselves off from these people with problems. They somehow were able to keep their own children together and at the same time be compassionate with those out there. And I think that's a great gift to be able to do that. So I think your impulse there, instead of just labeling this as a good person, that's a bad person, try to nuance it, Paul. I think that's very important.
Talk about the decisions that they make, which and everybody makes a blend of good decisions and bad decisions, it seems to me.
Now, one last comment here is the final fate of Joab. You know, when he makes a mistake, again, supporting the wrong guy, Adonijah, and Solomon calls him to account. And it's really quite clear, verse 28, when Joab hears, he knows what's coming. When the news came to Joab, for Joab had supported Adonijah, though he did not support Absalom, Joab fled to the tent of the Lord and grasped the horns of the altar. When it was told King Solomon, Joab has fled to the tent of the Lord, is now beside the altar, Solomon sent Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, saying, go strike him down. So Benaiah came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, the king commands, come out. But he said, no, I will die here. Then Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, thus said Joab, and thus he answered him. The king replied to him, do as he has said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and from my father's house the guilt for the blood that Joab shed without cause. The Lord will bring back his bloody deeds on his own head, because without the knowledge of my father David, he attacked and killed with a sword two men more righteous and better than himself. So ultimately, there was judgment, and that's the sadness of Joab's life. Next week, we talk about Rizpah, influence of faithfulness, a very background character. Thank you to Dave and Paul for our discussion today and to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer. Thanks to all of you for listening in. The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.